Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Martha. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. So tell us who you are and what you do.
So my name is Martha Waters, and it's my second book, To Love and to Loathe, comes out on April 6th, and I write historical rom-coms, I guess is the best way to describe them. I feel like rom-com is not used as often with historical romances, but I really feel like that's what I write. And by day, I'm a children's librarian, so very different. Always have to explain to people, my books are not for children. definitely not. It's led to some awkward conversations at work, in fact. So I write historical rom-coms.
I love this. Yeah, your books are like, for contemporary romance readers who want to dive into because they watched Bridgerton, they're like, oh my gosh, I need to read historical romance. I feel like your books are a good gateway drug for them. Like they're easy to palate. You're not caught up. And I think you write about there's certain freedoms that you have as a widow heroine or emerge in trouble. Like you're not in the marriage market per se. Mm-hmm. You're trying to figure out the logistics of the time. Yeah.
Right.
So you're like a good gateway drug.
Yeah, it's funny because I started reading, I read a lot of contemporary romance now, but I started reading historical. That's kind of my gateway into romance. And so when I started writing my first book, I just thought I was writing, you know, kind of a like just your average historical romance, just like what I wanted to read essentially. But it's funny because my agent that I signed with, like she hardly represents any historical author. She represents a lot of contemporary authors. So when her thing all along has been like, these are great romances for contemporary readers because they feel very sort of modern. I don't know. I always describe my books as like very self-consciously and deliberately historically inaccurate. Like I'm definitely trying to write very modern feeling characters, just kind of having fun with the historical setting.
I love this. And so why Regency? You know, why pick Regency? Was it because you already written Regency or read Pride and Prejudice and was like,
oh. I mean, I feel like everyone starts like Pride and Prejudice.
Exactly it depends. One. It depends on the time frame. So I've asked this question to historical romance authors. And so Joanna Shubb writes Gilded Age. And so she was actually The Age of Innocence was her book. She read Pride and Prejudice later on. Aww. And Elizabeth Hoyt writes 1700s, and she had a different book that it was like she did not write Pride and Prejudice. So it tends to be like, it, you know, Pride and Prejudice tends to fall into the big England, you know, 1800, Regency, Victorian. But you'd be surprised at asking this question. Not everyone has Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, Regencies, well, first of all, there's a funny thing where a lot of people, like the Regency period itself was only like 9 years long. It's like a very brief window. People kind of use the term a little more broadly than is like technically accurate. Like a lot of things that are technically pre-Victorian, like Sarah McLean writes like pre-Victorian romances, but everyone would call her a Regency romance author, I think. So I think the term gets used a little more broadly than is accurate, which is fine. I don't really care. I think it's fun because I think what's nice about the Regency is it feels both familiar and that like there have been 5,000 Jane Austen adaptations out there. So people kind of like know the rules and there's this very sort of rigid social structure that we're kind of familiar with just through other like books and pieces of pop culture, but like it feels like historical and familiar at the same time. Like we kind of go into it knowing the rules. I described it in an interview one time as like fan fiction almost, like we're all kind of playing in the same sandbox with this sort of agreed upon set of like rules. So if you're reading your Regency, then you expect to see them either like go to, I don't know, Wednesday nights at Almax or like go to the theater or go to a ball, go like to have ices at Gunter's. Like I just thought there are all these pieces of it that are very familiar from book to book. And that makes it a lot of fun to sort of play around in. if you're kind of operating in this universe, that even though it's set 200 years ago, a lot of the pieces are very familiar to readers. So I find that really fun to kind of play around with.
Yeah, I never thought of that way, but it makes sense. Because I'm like, I see it from book to book, you authors to authors, they're writing about the same period. And you just like, you get to know the different things, like get to know, like, you know, merch convenience may happen if they go to Gardner Green, you know, and it's exactly like forever and a day to get there, you know. And so like all those different, you know, Wednesday nights in Elma, it's like, you know, or even the season, you know,
like, yeah. And I mean, it could be a good thing and a bad thing, that kind of like shared understanding. Like, other than Jane Austen, I would say the person who's had the most impact sort of on the Regency romance, like mm-hmm. as a subgenre, would be Georgette Heyer. And mm-hmm. like, we kind of accepted this, like, oh, well, we've all read a bunch of Georgette Heyer books, and so we think this is what the Regency was, where there were like no people of color, or and everyone was straight and white and rich. And I mean, like, this isn't actually what the Regency was like. So it can be a bad thing as well if we feel too much like we know exactly what the Regency was. But I don't know. I just do think it makes for fun reading and writing, honestly, because there's just so many familiar beats that it's fun to then kind of play around with those as a writer.
I love this. And so let's talk about To Love and To Loathe. Like, it actually, To Have and To Hug. So that's, yeah, I had the first book, which is Marriage and Trouble. And this sets the universe that you're living here. So your first book was Marriage and Trouble, and you're like, basically did not talk to each other for 4 years, you know, and go through all the different processes of, like, you know.
Couples counseling did not exist in 1817. They really just needed therapy.
Yeah, they needed someone to be like, talk to each other. Right. Like, but they go through like this whole process of, like, you know, consumption and like seducing.
As one does.
Acting your heart, acting in an act, you know, hiring an actor, you know, whose title, you know. So how was the process of coming out of the different hijinks to get them to, you know, to,
it's funny,
and talk to each other?
Writing To Have and To Hoax, I think, was probably like the easy, writing the first draft of To Have and To Hoax was like the most fun and easy writing experience I've ever had, because it's the first time I tried writing for adults. I thought I wanted to write like kids and YA books before that. So it's kind of the fun experience of like playing around in a new genre and realizing that, like, this is what I really wanted to write. And then the experience of trying to turn that book into something that made remote sense, with like characters, motivations that actually made sense. And I mean, it was a journey. It was a tough book, because you had, I mean, they're both behaving so kind of infuriatingly and frustratingly, and they're both being very stubborn. So it was hard in the like several many, I mean, with my debut book, it takes like years to get a debut novel published. So like literally years of revisions I did on that book to kind of get it to a point where I felt like what they were doing was insane, but at least you believe that it makes sense to them almost. So like, by contrast, writing To Love and To Loathe was kind of a breath of fresh air, because I was like, oh, they're not like playing a game of chicken essentially and just lying to each other constantly. Like, this is really refreshing to write. It's a lot easier in some ways.
I love this. Yeah, To Love and To Loathe, it's like, it felt like different. It's a felt a different sense. Like, they bickered to each other. Like, they're supposed to be enemies to lovers, but it wasn't like so enemies to lovers. They're just like, they really like each other, but they didn't want
to. It's frenemies. It's frenemies to lovers. Yeah. I don't want frenemies to lovers, because it's not friends to lovers, but it's not really enemies to lovers either. Even like, I've been seeing it described as that a lot. And I'm like, I mean, I guess it's more enemies to lovers than it is friends to lovers, but really it is frenemies to lovers.
Yeah, like, they like each other and they just don't want to act upon that. They're like, we like each other, right? We can't do anything about it, and therefore I'm just going to bicker, you know? Yeah. So,
like, they love to hate each other. Like, that's kind of the dynamic they have, and they don't want to admit how much they actually like each other, even though it's kind of obvious to everyone else around them.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's obvious. Like, everyone's like, oh, they should get together. And they're like, no. We're going to do an arrangement, you know? We're going to do a bed, and then I'm going to do an arrangement, and we're going to be lovers, but you're not my mistress. Like, it was like this whole process of, like, you know, like, get together. Like, you're bound to. It's going to happen. I may be catching feelings. Oh, no, no, no. I'm not catching feelings.
They're both very unsentimental, like possibly I get the most unsentimental characters I ever have or ever will write. And I feel like oftentimes in romance, like one character is deeply unsentimental and the other one is less so, but this wasn't a kind of a, it was tricky. It was writing two characters who were very similar in a lot of ways. And I think that's kind of what makes them work, is they really understand each other. Like they have that, like, I know what you're doing. We're similar. Like we operate similarly. But I feel like oftentimes in romance, it's more about like kind of opposites. So it was an interesting challenge writing these two characters who, yeah, like they don't want to catch feelings. They like are very unsentimental and like love, blah, feelings, blah. So it was fun to write.
It was fun. So let's chat about like riding a rake, you know, because he's a rake, even though he's a future reform rake. Like he's like, you know, I'm taking care of the state. I'm, you know, taking it from the brink of financial debt. I'm going to pay my dad's kids and, you know, and all these different things. But he's been jumping around mistress and mistress. So, and he gets bad reputation. He gets like bad reviews.
Yeah, so I don't know, with writing his character, I'd already kind of developed it to a certain extent since he was a side character in my first book, Into Heaven to Hoax. And so I knew as I was writing him Into Heaven to Hoax, I already kind of like had the idea in mind that I would write a book for him. So I was kind of trying to, in like scenes that he was in, I was trying to like think through like, who is he really more than he just seems to be in this book where he's not that important to the plot. And so I kind of knew going in, there was a lot of, like he presents this sort of like carefree rake persona, but that there was a lot of trauma there just from his dad's death and his brother's death and feeling kind of unworthy of the position he holds. So I knew all of that. I knew how troubled he was going in. And then when I was kind of trying to figure out what the sort of like hook for the book would be, I just really wanted to play around with the idea that all these romance heroes, like, I love that romance really, like, centers women's pleasure and, like, makes sex great for them. Like, I love that about romance novels, do not get me wrong. But also, like, the first time people have sex in most romance novels, it is amazing. And the hero, like, this is timid virgin heroine, and the hero is like, oh, don't worry.
He got it down. No, even
a virgin. For you. And it's like, oh, wow, he's just like a genius in the bedroom. And I'm like, okay, listen, these guys were like really, really rich and powerful and could like just basically buy any mistress they wanted. And I just refuse to believe that all of them were that amazing in the sack when like, who's going to tell them otherwise? And so I really wanted to play around with the fact that like the idea that maybe one of these sort of like famous rakes wouldn't actually be like a genius in the bedroom.
I love this premise because it's like true. Like they're not this like, yeah, like they got it right. They know all the positions, they know the moments. And I love the fact that Diana was like, no, I'm not gonna let you play around with this. It's not cutting it. Like this is not working out.
Well, and it's like, the thing is, like, part of it is that like Diana's not that experienced because she's been widowed for quite a while, and like she and her like former husband like didn't have a super like active sex life, so it's not like she's coming into it with a lot of experience, but like she's not an idiot. Like she knows when something feels good and when something doesn't feel good. And so it was very satisfying to sort of write some of those scenes where she was like, actually I have notes.
Yes, and she did have notes. So let's talk about writing a widow harem, because it's like a different piece of itself. Like, you know, they have freedom, they can move around the city and to balls and be in the company of men without having a sense of like, you know, property or like, you know, or to be proper around it. How much fun was it to ride a widow harem?
Yeah, it's really fun. And it's, I think, yeah, so there's first the obvious appeal, like, as you said, is that they have a lot more freedom. Like they can be alone with a man without like having to, you know, have a chaperone nearby. It's funny, the current book that I'm working on writing right now is my first time writing a character who is like unmarried at the beginning of the book. And I get her married quite quickly in the book because I'm just like, look, I can't say, okay. But you might be able to guess, but I'm not actually allowed to say yet because we've not announced it. But anyone, people who read To Love and To Loathe can probably guess what the next book is. But yeah, and I guess I got her married as soon as possible in the book because I'm like, oh, this is really hard. I'm writing an unmarried heroine, because yeah, if you write a character, a heroine in a Regency who's already married, you just have so much more freedom for what you can do with them. And then like, but honestly, even more than that for me is the sort of power dynamics at play, because I mean, I've read a bajillion historical romance novels and I love them. And I mean, I've read 5,000 zillion virgin heroines and I really have no problem with it, but it just feels like the dynamic is so often like, let me teach you about sex. What? I don't know anything about this. No one has told me anything. Like, what is a penis? So I really like writing either a widow or someone who's already married, just because it feels like the hero and the heroine are on more like equal footing going into it. And I think it feels important to me, just considering like the time period we're dealing with, when men, just by virtue of the society they're living in, like already have so much more power than the women do, that like anything you can do to place them on even like a little bit more even footing, I like that. So I do like widow heroines and historicals. Like I gravitate towards them, I think. Or like Marriage and Trouble. Like Eloisa James writes a lot of Marriage and Trouble historicals, and I'm like, I really, maybe this is why I love her books so much, is because so often like the hero and heroine are already married.
Yeah, you don't have to go through the whole process of like the courtship, you know. You're like, I don't have to deal with that. I can actually go to,
well, like shared history, you know, like if you can convince your readers going in like that the hero and heroine have shared history, and like really make them believe it, and like create a dynamic between them that like you believe, oh yeah, these people know each other already and know things about each other, then it like, I mean, you're making your own job easier, honestly. So like I'm a fan of that.
Love this. So what's been the process of writing in the pandemic? How is it different? Yeah, I know.
It's bad. It's been not good. I don't like writing at home that much. Like I really like writing, you know, in a coffee shop or like at a bar or just outside somewhere. And so having to write just in my house, in my living room, either at my desk or like on my couch or something, like it's been not good. And I made the mistake, I think, of, so I finished up revisions on To Love and To Loathe in like June or so. So pretty early, like only a couple months of the pandemic. And I immediately tried to dive into my next book, because I was like, gotta do it, gotta write. And what I really should have done is just been like, nope, this is a global pandemic. Let's just chill, basically. Because I've had a really hard time writing the book that I'm still currently writing. I've not turned into my editor yet. And it's been rough. It's just, I've done a bunch of, I mean, I've had like literally 10 aborted first drafts where I've tossed out. Sometimes I quit after like 2000 words. I quit after 20,000 words one time. Like it's been not great. It's better now, because which like, sadly, I feel like I'm used to the fact that I can't leave my house and go anywhere else to write. But yeah, in the early days especially, it was just so hard to sort of sustain attention for anything other than like existential dread and worrying that we were all about to die. So yeah, it's kind of been hard to get in the right mental space. And everyone's like, oh, well, isn't it nice to kind of like get to escape to like Regency England? And I'm like, yes, but also I like have not been feeling my funniest in the past year. I've got to be honest, like writing something that's supposed to be like funny and light and charming, it's not really how I have been feeling or how most people have been feeling. So do not recommend creative endeavors during a global pandemic. Not a fan. Really looking forward to this being over.
I agree completely. So have you been reading? Actually, let's talk about all the fact that you do Friday Fives recommendations. I absolutely adore them.
Thank you.
Your books that I already read and I'm like, I'm agreeing with it, or books that I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to add them to my TBR. So you can recycle any Friday Five, but do you have any ones you want to share?
I feel like, I don't know if I've actually, I also gotten to the point where I've done so many of them. It's funny because I started last summer being like, I don't know if anyone cares about this. And I'm just going to try doing them on Instagram every week and see if anyone wants to watch. And a lot of people seem to be watching them, but it's gotten to where I've done so many, I can't remember which themes I've done already. So I don't know if I've done this theme or not, but I was thinking about like books that have really good banter, just because that's what I like to write, as people who read my books can probably guess. So I was thinking of ones like five romance novels that I think have really good banter. And so I would say first would be my favorite book of 2020, Boyfriend Material by Alexis Hall, which I feel like everyone has already read. But if you haven't, it is a fake dating contemporary romance, queer contemporary romance set in London. And I am obsessed with it. It is so clever. then if everyone is joining the Bridgerton parade now. So I would say the second Bridgerton book, The Viscount Who Loved Me, I think has the best banter out of the entire series. That series is like my gateway to reading romance. And I was like, oh, look at all the banter. I love this. Let's see, Act Like It by Lucy Parker, which is another contemporary romance, also fake dating. Yes, that's a fake dating one. Yes, it is. Set in the London theater world. She's probably my favorite contemporary romance author currently writing. I think she's a genius and truly writes the best dialogue out of like any author that I currently read. And that's a really good kind of like grumpy and sunshine trope in that one as well. Let's see. Take a Hint, Danny Brown by Talia Hibbert is another one. Oh, gosh. She writes amazing banter. I have her new one. I have Actor A.D. Brown like on my bedside table right now because my library gave it to me. It comes out tomorrow as we're recording this. And I like my library is like, it just appeared on my whole shelf today. And I was like, oh, I think this is illegal, but I'm going to take it. Like, this is very exciting. So I'm going to start reading that tonight. She writes an amazing banter also. And then I would say, one more historical, A Duke in Shining Armor by Loretta Chase. Loretta Chase is one of my absolute favorite historical authors, like up there with Julia Quinn for me. And this one is like a runaway bride. And like the hero goes to like catch the one runaway bride to return her to like his best friend. And he actually ends up falling in love with her and like marrying the runaway bride instead. It sounds deranged. It is mildly deranged, but the banter, A plus.
I love this so much. And at your age, Ebron is delightful. You're going to love
it. Yeah, I've been doing fewer arcs lately because like there are so few print arcs now and almost everything is digital. And I've been trying to read fewer eBooks because I got kind of burned out on them after a while, the pandemic. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to get an arc of Actor Age Eve Brown, but I really want one. There's like several upcoming books that I haven't read yet that normally I would have because I'm just like, no more eBooks. And it's like kind of killing me. But now I get to have the like normal reader experience of like, oh, a book comes out on a certain day and then I get to actually read it, which is very exciting and sort of novel.
I love this so much. So tell us where you're finding online.
Okay, so I'm on Twitter. On Twitter, less frequently these days because it's crazy over there. On Twitter and Instagram, more often on Instagram at Martha B. Waters. And then I have a newsletter, which you can sign up for on my website, marthawaters.com. And if you want more book recommendations, I do book recs for all ages in every newsletter. So
I love this. Thank you, Martha, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyoureadingnextblog.com. The What You Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always in the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadingnextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.